This is the Internet Multicasting Service. Harper Audio presents actor James Mason reading Charles Dickens's A Tale of Two Cities in a scene that shows the violence that simmered in France just before the Revolution.
Again, on the other hand, they whisper at the fountain, resumed the countryman, that he is brought down into our country to be executed on the spot, and that he will very certainly be executed. They even whisper that because he has slain Monseigneur, and because Monseigneur was the father of his tenants, serfs, what you will, he will be executed as a parricide. One old man says at the fountain that his right hand, armed with the knife, will be burnt off before his face, that into wounds which will be made in his arms, his breast, and his legs, there will be poured boiling oil, melted lead, hot resin, wax, and sulphur. Finally, that he will be torn limb from limb by four strong horses. That old man says all this was actually done to a prisoner who made an attempt on the life of the late king, Louis XV. But how do I know if he lies? I'm no scholar. Listen once again, then, Jacques, said the man with the restless hand and the craving air. The name of that prisoner was Damiens, and it was all done in open day, in the open streets of this city of Paris, and nothing was more noticed in the vast concourse that saw it done than the crowd of ladies of quality and fashion who were full of eager attention to the last, Jacques, prolonged until nightfall, when he had lost two legs and an arm and still breathed. And it was done? Nothing more was said, and the mender of roads, being found already dozing on the topmost stair, was advised to lay himself down on the pallet bed and take some rest. He needed no persuasion and was soon asleep. Worse quarters than Defarge's wine shop could easily have been found in Paris for a provincial slave of that degree, saving from mysterious dread of Madame, by which he was constantly haunted. His life was very new and agreeable. But Madame sat all day at her counter, so expressly unconscious of him, and so particularly determined not to perceive that his being there had any connection with anything below the surface, that he shook in his wooden shoes whenever his eye lighted on her. For he contended with himself that it was impossible to foresee what that lady might pretend next, and he felt assured that if she should take it into her brightly ornamented head to pretend that she had seen him do a murder and afterwards flay the victim, she would infallibly go through with it until the play was played out. Therefore, when Sunday came, the mender of roads was not enchanted, though he said he was, to find that Madame was to accompany Monsieur and himself to Versailles. It was additionally disconcerting to have Madame knitting all the way there in a public conveyance. It was additionally disconcerting yet to have Madame in the crowd in the afternoon, still with her knitting in her hands as the crowd waited to see the carriage of the King and Queen. "You work hard, Madame," said a man near her. "Yes," answered Madame Defarge, "I have a good deal to do." "What do you make, Madame?"
"Many things."
"For instance?"
"For instance," returned Madame Defarge composedly, "shrouds."
The man moved a little way away as soon as he could, and the mender of roads fanned himself with his blue cap, feeling it mightily close and oppressive. If he needed a king and queen to restore him, he was fortunate in having his remedy at hand, for soon the large-faced king and the fair-faced queen came in their golden coach attended by the shining bull's-eye of their court, a glittering multitude of laughing ladies and fine lords, and in jewels and silks and powder and splendour and elegantly spurning figures and handsomely disdainful faces of both sexes, the mender of roads bathed himself, so much to his temporary intoxication that he cried, "Long live the king, long live the queen, long live everybody and everything," as if he had never heard of ubiquitous Jacques in his time. Then there were gardens, courtyards, terraces, fountains, green banks, more king and queen, more bullseye, more lords and ladies, more long live they all, until he absolutely wept with sentiment. During the whole of this scene, which lasted some 3 hours, he had plenty of shouting and weeping and sentimental company, and throughout Defarge held him by the collar, as if to restrain him from flying at the objects of his brief devotion and tearing them to pieces. "Bravo," said Defarge, clapping him on the back when it was all over, like a patron. "You are a good boy." The mender of roads was now coming to himself and was mistrustful of having made a mistake in his late demonstrations, but no. "You are the fellow we want," said Defarge in his ear. "You make these fools believe that it will last forever. Then they are the more insolent, and it is nearer ended." "Hey," cried the mender of roads reflectively, "that's true. These fools know nothing. While they despise your breath and would stop it forever and ever in you or in 100 like you rather than in one of their own horses or dogs, they only know what your breath tells them. Let it deceive them then a little longer. It cannot deceive them too much."
Madame Defarge looked superciliously at the client and nodded in confirmation. "As to you," she said, "you would shout and shed tears for anything if it made a show and a noise. Say, would you not?"
"Truly, madam, I think so, for the moment." "If you were shown a great heap of dolls, and were set upon them to pluck them to pieces and despoil them for your own advantage, you would pick out the richest and gayest. Say, would you not?"
Truly, yes, madam."
"And if you were shown a flock of birds unable to fly, and were set upon them to strip them of their feathers for your own advantage, you would set upon the birds of the finest feathers, would you not?"
"It is true, madam."
"You have seen both dolls and birds today," said Madame Defarge, with a wave of her hand toward the place where they had last been apparent. "Now, go home." When Saint-Antoine had again enfolded the Defarges in his dusky wings, and they, having finally alighted near the Saint's boundaries, were picking their way on foot through the black mud and offal of his streets, Madame Defarge spoke to her husband.
"Say then, my friend, what did Jacques of the police tell thee?"
"Very little tonight, but all he knows. There is another spy commissioned for our quarter. There may be many more, for all that he can say, but he knows of one."
"Good. His appearance, is it known?"
"Age about 40 years, height about 5'9", black hair, complexion dark, generally rather handsome visage, eyes dark, face thin, long and sallow, nose aquiline, but not straight, having a peculiar inclination toward the left cheek, expression therefore sinister."
"Eh, my face, it is a portrait," said Madame, laughing. "He shall be registered tomorrow."
The night was hot, and the shop, close shut and surrounded by so foul a neighbourhood, was ill-smelling. Monsieur Defarge's olfactory sense was by no means delicate, but the stock of wine smelt much stronger than it ever tasted, and so did the stock of rum and brandy and aniseed. He whiffed the compound of scents away as he put down his smoked-out pipe.
"You are fatigued," said Madame, raising her glance as she knotted the money. "There are only the usual odours."
"I am a little tired," her husband acknowledged.
"You are a little depressed, too," said Madame,
whose quick eyes had never been so intent on the accounts, but they had had a ray or two for him. "Oh, the men, the men."
"But, my dear," began Defarge. "But, my dear," repeated Madame, nodding firmly, "but, my dear, you are faint of heart tonight, my dear."
"Well, then," said Defarge, as if a thought were wrung out of his breast, "it is a long time."
"It is a long time," repeated his wife, "and when is it not a long time? Vengeance and retribution require a long time. It is the rule."
"It does not take a long time to strike a man with lightning," said Defarge.
"How long," demanded Madame composedly, "does it take to make and store the lightning? Tell me."
Defarge raised his head thoughtfully, as if there was something in that, too.
"It does not take a long time," said Madame, "for an earthquake to swallow a town. Eh, well, tell me how long it takes to prepare the earthquake. A long time, I suppose, said Defarge. And when it is ready, it takes place and grinds to pieces everything before it. In the meantime, it is always preparing, though it is not seen or heard. That is your consolation. Keep it.
This has been Harper Audio. HarperCollins is the copyright owner of this recording and has consented to a limited distribution of Harper Audio as an 8 kHz computer sound file on Internet Town Hall. It is a violation of United States and international copyright laws to copy these recordings in any other way. Harper Audio is a trademark of HarperCollins Publishers, Inc. To order a copy of this tape or to request a catalog of all Harper Audio spoken word cassettes, please call 1-800-C-HARPER or 717-941-1214 or send mail to harper@town.hall.org. This has been a production of the Internet Multicasting Service. Support for Harper Audio is provided by HarperCollins and by Sun Microsystems and O'Reilly & Associates. Network connectivity for the Internet Multicasting Service is provided by UUNET Technologies and MFS DataNet.